Our second reader is C.D. Wright, who I have the honour of publishing in this country at Bloodaxe. Her work is enormously varied. She's an experimental writer, a southern writer, and a socially committed writer. Yet she continuously reinvents herself with each new volume. Much of her poetry is rooted in the landscape and people of her childhood in the Ozark Mountains of Arkansas. She writes with a distinctive southern accent, as you'll hear, but it's not just an accent in the voice, it's an accent in the language of the poetry, and a cinematic eye with a secular wit. The resulting poems are hypnotic documentaries that offer what she calls a once-and-for-all thing, opaque and revelatory, ceaselessly burning. Bloodaxe published her first UK retrospective, Like Something Flying Backwards, in 2007, and you'll find copies of that at the back of the room. But today she'll be reading from her latest book, from Bloodaxe, One with Others, which came out from America a couple of years ago. She's reading from the American edition, so don't think that you can't buy it, because it's there with a different cover at the back. In this book, she returns to her native Arkansas and examines an explosive incident grounded in the civil rights movement. In her signature style, she interweaves oral histories, hymns, lists, interviews, newspaper accounts, and personal memories, especially those of her mentor, who's called V in the poem, with the voices of witnesses, neighbours, police, activists, and a group of black students who are rounded up and detained in an empty public swimming pool. This is a history told by many voices, and it leaps off the page, both a book-length poem and a probing work of investigative journalism. It won the National Book Circle Critics Award. And I'll just finish with a quote from The Guardian by Vesna Goldsworthy, who reviewed her selected. She called C.D.'s work bold, striking, and sensual, as soothing as poetry filled to the brim and with the bloody mess of living can hope to be. Hers is a harsh and unforgiving but richly beautiful world. It's not the America of sophisticated coastal cities or plush university campuses, but of small towns and villages in the middle of nowhere in which death and nourishment stand together as they must. Wright is an unmistakably southern poet, but hers is not the south of wisteria-clad mansions we know from Hollywood confections. Rather, it's the blue-collar south of blues and bluegrass. Her poems carry the voice of her native Arkansas, but her poetry is far too experimental and modernist and too imbued with a range of international influences to be pigeonholed as regional, as you'll now hear. So would you please welcome C.D. Wright.
Oh, thank you, and thank everybody who has both participated and made possible the Ledbury Festival. We're quite smitten with this town and countryside, and we've had wonderful hosts, Chris and Bella Johnson. Everyone has been really wonderful. It's a pleasure to be here. My book, One with Others, A Little Book of Her Days, is set in the Arkansas Delta in 1969, a year after the assassination of Martin Luther King in Memphis, which was about 42 miles from the setting of this poem. All up and down the Mississippi River in the year following King's death, forms of uprisings, various forms of uprising took place, some more or less spontaneous, some somewhat planned. This is not a conventional chronicle, but a mangy and rangy rumination on some of these events. And more especially, it was intended as a tribute to my late friend Margaret Kalin Vitito. A woman I met when I was still in my teens, totally iconoclastic, irate, hilarious, unsubduable, dazzlingly literary, smart, self-taught woman living in the Arkansas Delta with her husband, with whom she was altogether incompatible, and their seven children. So when her town exploded in 1969, over racial divisions. She stepped up, stepped forward, crossed over, so to speak. So ultimately, my book became a reckoning with those times through the cracked lens of that particular historical moment in that locale. I think of it as a footnote to the civil rights movement, of which there is a great deal of very, very rich literature. And I'm going to focus primarily on portraits of V with not so many references to the incidents. "It smells like home," she said, dying. And I, "What's that you smell, V?" And V, dying. "The faint cut of walnuts in the grass, my husband's work shirt on the railing, the pulled barbecued evening, the turned dirt. Even in this pitch, I can see the vapor-lit pole, the crepe myrtle not in shadow, my sweet Betsy, that exact streaked sky, the mongrel dog being pelted with rain, mine eyes pelted, all fear overcome at last, no scent." That's what she said, dying in the one-room apartment in Hell's Kitchen. I came in by the old road from Memphis, the old military road across the iron bridge. No one in the field, not a living soul. I drove around with the windows down, the red buds in bloom, sky a discolored chenille spread, weather generally fair. The marchers step off from jailhouse, the jailhouse at Bragg Spur, 8:17 a.m., more police than reporters, more reporters than police. The self-described prime minister of the invaders, 31, and five others have begun their trek. Sweet Willie Wine's walk against fear is on the move. V, we had the water and shoes in my car. There was a black man named Stiles. He was a midget. He kept that water good and cold for the marchers. The threat, they say, is coming from the east, of the six Negroes walking to Little Rock and the white woman driving a station wagon. It was something you came through that. V, it was invigorating. It was the most alive I ever felt in my life. I park in a spot of shade and walk around. Downtown half shut down. Cotton gin still going, not strong, but going. Tracks working, neglected, but working. The infamous overpass brought down. September 15, 2004, Hell's Kitchen. Her life surrendered to her body. September 15, the De Padre Hidalgo uttered the famous grito that kicked off the Mexican Revolution. She would have liked that, going off the air on a day marking a great struggle for independence. The river rises from a mountain of granite. The river receives the river of the Little River, the house where my friend once lived, indefinitely empty. Walnuts turning dark in the grass, papers collected on the porch. If I put my face to the glass, I can make out the ghost of her ironing board, bottle of bourbon on the end. Her former husband. I'd come home from work and she would be in a rage and I just couldn't understand it. They were a poor match. She says so to this day. She said so then. They barely tolerated one another, but they were Catholic, another error bred in the bone. If he looked at her and she looked at him, in 9 months she was back at the lying in. My best guess, she woke up in a rage 8 days a week. Her friends, the musician, the poet, the actor, Gert, she taught me how to live. Now she has taught me how to die. And I, she was my Goomba, my Rafiki. It was the honor of my life to know her, honor of my life. Ellis, a crowd will gather and not know it walks the very street whereon a thing once walked that seemed a burning cloud. Yeats, she knew inside out, inside out. A man known as Skeeter his whole life. Oh, yeah, I remember her. She celebrated all her kids' birthdays on the same day. I talked to a number of people in person on the phone, mostly the phone when I could get anyone to talk to me. I made so many calls. Can we talk later? Because I'm trying to cook for my family. He's not here now. He's fishing. I've got to go to the hospital to see my brother. He's about to pass. I've got to go to Memphis. I've got to work the night shift out at the big pen. I worked there since the plant shut. Can we talk later? I'm on neighborhood watch, and the kids are walking out. There's no food here. I'm left holding the baby. You'll have to speak to the hand. This was my rest day. He's fishing. I'm working at the poles. I'm on pole watch. I've got to go to Little Rock for my checkup. My pressure's gone up. Since he got laid off, he's always fishing. When he can't go home, he's watching the fishing channel. So how is, when he can't go, he's home watching the fishing channel. So how is the fishing? Oh, well, you know, it's lots worse elsewhere. The only sure thing were the prices and the temperatures. 2 pounds of Oleo cost 25 cents, and 5 cans of Cherokee Freestone peaches are $1. The Cosmos Club president held a tea at her lovely lakeside home. 2 more big tree boys died, make fine soldiers. A Rolling Stone was found in the bottom of his swimming pool. Rufus Thomas and his Bearcats will headline at the Negro Fair. And Miss Teenage Arkansas, a comely young miss, is saluted once again for her charm and pulchritude. Sunshine Fresh Hydrox cookies, 1 pound for 59 cents. The assistant warden at 300 pounds is the one identified for administering the strap at the Arkansas Pen, a self-sustaining institution. Several say they were beaten for failing to meet cotton quotas. Others, more than often, did not know why they were beaten. One testified to more than 70 beatings. The strap is not in question. In question is when it is to be administered. The river is impounded by the lake. Below the lake, the river enters the lowlands. It slithers through cypress and willow, and the air itself cloudy or clear, stirring with smoke or dust or malathion, if you get my drift, must not be construed to be indivisible, no more than blood. There is black blood and white blood. There is black air and white air. This includes the air in the tires blowing out over the interstate between town and river, the air that riddles the children when a crop duster buzzes a schoolyard, the air that bellows from the choir of robes when the very reverend pillow bids, be seated, and even the air socked from the jaw of the champ born 17 miles west in Sand Slough, when he took that phantom punch, the year in which this particular round of troubles began. Today, gentle reader, the sermon, once again, Segregation After Death. She had a brain like the reading room in the old British Museum. She could have donned fingerless gloves and written Das Kapital while hexagons of snowflakes tumbled by the window panes. She could have made it up whole cloth. She could have sewn the cotton out of her own life while the Thames froze over. She loved words, cats, long-playing records, laughter, men, alcohol, cigarettes, the supernatural. It makes for a carnal list, pointless to rank, 5 in diapers at once, a stench she claimed she never got used to. It gradually turns from clear to coffee. The river receives another river near its mouth and joins the mighty river to the south of Helena. Yonkapin are the lilies in the ditches. Pretty bloom for a filthy drainage ditch, isn't it now? An Arkansas arc is not a rainbow, but an old iron bridge over troubled brown waters. I could imagine my friend V being blind and seeing everything, marrying a dozen men and living alone, having 7 children and being barren, toting an M16 that looked like a hoe, whistling down a taxi in a coal capital. I could see the faded and ragged fields replaced by blue shadows on hills of snow, or turning from a stag at the edge of the interstate into a freshwater pearl before more sediment entered the river than flowed from its mouth. Dear Abby, When Daryl and I were first married, he asked me to iron his undershorts. His mother always did. At first, I didn't mind because we had two children, but now we have two, and I could save a lot of time tossing them in the dryer and folding them. But I tried that once, and I never heard the end of it. Daryl could say he could feel the difference. What would you do? Dear, too much ironing. I would iron his underwear. You're wasting more energy complaining and arguing than it takes to iron 7 pairs of shorts once a week. Everybody has a problem. What's yours? When V ended up back in Kentucky after her expulsion from Big Tree, she kept a retired fighting cock. It was her only pleasure, Helmet. No one else could get near him. Long before this black and white issue, she said she was going to make up a coat of arms, and the motto on its heater would read, "I never knew what misery was till I came to Arkansas." Headline, the Negroes fail to move. The weather could break. The sheriff's button says never. The children's minds say never waver. V, rising to contempt, and that sheriff, may he be taken to the woods and there made to sing like a tree planted by the water. May he be linked to the first rib he broke and it be fashioned of bronze and run through the end of his nose. He may then be taken to the pool and there taught the dead man's float, and then be taken to the library, and there will his hideous pink testicles be removed by the assistant librarian and put in the terrarium with the resident spider. Dear Abby, friends of ours have a son who has gone the hippies route. When we inquire about their children, they have others who are married and one who is in the service. Should we ask about their hippie son, or should we just not mention him, like he is dead? We know they are pretty sick about the life he leads. Dear needs to know. Knowing that your friends would be humiliated or embarrassed by the mention of their hippie son, don't mention him. Everybody has a problem. What's yours?